deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hello, listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in the Seattle area and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. Today, we're very fortunate and grateful to have as our guest, Danyon Brinkley, one of the world's most famous psychics and mediums, coming to us live by telephone from Nevada. A short introduction, Danyon had three near-death experiences in 1975, 1989, and 1997. And during these experiences, he traveled out of his body, passing through a tunnel of light where he had a detailed life review with spiritual beings who showed him visions of the future and discussed his life mission. His experiences were detailed in the best-selling book Saved by the Light, which was later made into a TV movie in 1995 by Fox Broadcasting Company. When it was broadcast, it debuted as one of the highest-rated television movies in that network's history. Danyon is also the co-founder and board chairman of the Twilight Brigade, a wonderful nonprofit international organization that supports bedside volunteers who provide companionship to those who are dying, especially veterans during the last years of life. We're very grateful again and honored to have Danyon on the show today, and we'll be starting our interview with him shortly. After 3:30 p.m., we will be taking call-ins, and our studio numbers are either area code 425-373-5527 or toll-free within Western Washington, 1-888-289-5569. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend, Professor Ann Nelson, a business professor at Walla Walla College, who's been a big supporter. The wonderful, beautiful energy of Seattle psychic Karen Winterland, Vancouver psychic Candia Sanders, Portland energy healer Dewey Myers, and of course, my angelic and earthly family. The Quest Bookstore in Seattle, the Leading Edge Bookstore in Seattle, and the Vajra Bookstore in Seattle. Some of our upcoming guests include Dr. Helen Caldicott, who is the world's authority on nuclear radiation, will be appearing live by telephone from Sydney, Australia, on April 4th. James von Prague, one of the world's most famous psychics, on September 26th. Susan Miller, one of the world's most famous astrologers, coming on the program live from New York City on April 11th. Uri Geller, again, one of the world's most famous psychics, coming on the program live from London, England on March 28th. Lori Toy, who will be talking about possible Earth changes 1 week from today on March 4th. Professor David Jacobs from Temple University in Philadelphia, one of the world's foremost UFO researchers, on March 18th. Christine Day, a Pleiadian ambassador, who will be returning to the program on May 30th with a live human extraterrestrial from the Pleiadian civilization. For a list of upcoming guests, please see our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. Let's go to a commercial break quickly and come back with Danyon. Hello, listeners. This is Ted Marr, the host of the Out of This World radio program, and I'd like to tell you about Mr. John Ho. He's considered one of the best scholars in Nostradamus and has an amazing track record of predicting all the winners of the U.S. presidential election with 100% accuracy for the past 44 years, as well as being able to accurately predict the weather patterns and political, social, and economic events both in this country and around the world. Every year, Mr. Ho publishes his predictions book, and we are very fortunate to have him now tell us about his latest publication, including his predictions for 2013 and 2014, including the Hopi Indian prophecies. John, could you please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be interested in Nostradamus?
I have always been fascinated with the patterns of history, more fascinated like a doctor is about the patterns of disease, try to cure the problem. One sees in the past a continuing repetition of the same mistakes in different costumes and different political and religious persuasions in different cultures. But essentially, it seems the more we change, the more we stay the same. And there seems to be a critical mass of these collective habits reaching a singularity in the next few decades, where if humanity does not break out of this cycle of repetition, the civilization is threatened. So my books, which are 23 and counting right now since 1987, and published in 19 languages, deal often with futurology and the more subjective science of prophecy, the traditions around the world, of which the most important of these prophetic figures is Nostradamus, which is one of my what I'm best known for on History Channel and television, as well as in my book.
Fascinating. John, where can people obtain the copy?
Well, this book is called Predictions for 2013-2014 because it is essentially a look at a period of time between May of this year, 2013, till the end of 2014, which is literally a breath of fresh air of reform can happen to limit the impact of quickening history, which is going to begin in the next 10 years to be some of the most upheavalful and disruptive and revolutionary periods that human history has ever known. And so we are in a period right now, and this book describes it in all the dimensions, from politics to religion to economy to global warming, ecology, and human consciousness, that looks at forecasts dealing with how we can lessen the blow of these quickening times that are coming in the mid-decade, or even avert and speed up the possibility of what is also often promised in the future as a more balanced human race, a more enlightened human race living in the golden age.
Fascinating. Well, I think your book is on point, and especially right now at this time in history. And listeners, I strongly recommend everyone to obtain a copy of this publication. It's nearly 500 pages long, and it contains so much information that we really can't do justice to it in this short commercial. I purchased a copy myself, and I think it's one of the best prophecy publications that I've ever read. For only $12.50, you can have a copy of the full work, or for only $3.99, you can obtain a shortened version.
For more information, please visit my website at outofthisworld1150.wix.com/outofthisworld.
This is Alternative Talk 1150. Got it? Cool.
Hello, listeners. For those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Mara, on KKNW 1150 AM out of Bellevue, Seattle. Today we're very lucky and fortunate to have with us Danion Brinkley, one of the world's foremost psychics and mediums. Danion, good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm happy and filled with joy. And if you want to talk about an out-of-world experience, how about those Seahawks?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you see that before they had their winning streak?
I talked to Pete Carroll about it when the season started.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, fantastic.
I told him that he would go to the Super Bowl and he had a 90% chance of winning, and he just laughed.
Oh, how funny.
He went to the Super Bowl and he had a 100% chance of winning.
That's great. That's great. Well, maybe off air after the program, if you could give me the winning lottery numbers, that would be great, and then
what it has to do is something living. I learned long ago, Ted, when you access those levels of consciousness, okay, it has to breathe. Football and horse racing and dog racing and sports where it has a human energetic connection, I'm very good at it. Lottery numbers and things like that, I don't access that. I have to have a tone in a person's voice. I have to listen to their voice, and when I listen to the verb conjugation, and once I hear the verb conjugation, mostly I don't hear the voice. My mind records what they're saying, but I'm only listening for action and intent, which is found in the verb. So I'm pretty good about those things. But without the human or the spiritual energetic involvement, then I'm just like everybody else.
Okay, well, I'll just tell our listeners then, for those calling in after 3:30 p.m., please don't ask about lottery numbers or stock picks, because then you won't be able to provide that kind of information.
Well, I can't answer that, but, it's about questions that, things that are confusing or, or mm-hmm. things that they're trying to resolve and they're at a breaking point, I'm willing mm-hmm. to help anytime.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Danny, you know, I read your book, Saved by the Life, and also your pieces about near-death experiences. And for those listeners who are just turning in, how did you have your first near-death experience in 1975? What happened exactly?
Well, you know, I grew up, and you can tell, I grew up in the South basically as a jerk. I mean, I was a self-absorbed prick.
Oh,
and
no.
I had no, in religion, you know, in South Carolina, everybody goes to hell. So from fundamentalist religions, everybody goes to hell. So by the time I was like 10 years old with everyone telling me I was going to hell because I was such a jerk, that I'd given away religion, and I played sports my way out of the nowhere, no man's land, and then I discovered the Marine Corps, which the more damage you did, the more stuff you destroyed, the better you got patted on the back, so my life was perfect. Then in 1975, I'm talking on the telephone. Lightning hits the phone line, comes down the phone line. It hits me in the side of my head above my left ear. It goes down my spine. It welds the nails of the heels of my shoes to the nails in the floor, which grounded me, knocked me out of my shoes, suspended me in the air, and threw me back down on the bed. I was dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months. And it took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. And what I discovered, Ted, is that we are great, powerful, and mighty spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm.
We are chosen to come here, and we choose to come here. And it's an absolute matter of choice, which develops free will.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to see, like, what I always try to preach about is the twilight, is the panoramic life of you. Everybody's going to see their entire life pass before them in a 360-degree panorama. You will have missed nothing. Then you're going to watch yourself, your life, from a second-person point of view, as though you were your own best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to look at nothing is ever, you never do anything wrong in your life. You only mess up how close you get to what your intention was. You set a series of goals before you come in, and you set a series of things you want to achieve, and then you make choices. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes those choices are right on the money, and sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what you do is you get to see how close you got, because a lot of times it was, "Hi, Dan, boy, that was really smart." And then other things that I saw was, "Man, what in the world were you thinking?"
Mm-hmm.
And then you see, then what happens is you literally become every person that you've ever encountered, and you feel the direct results of your interaction between you and those persons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is the point through all that other stuff that made the most impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be everybody that I've ever encountered, and I'm going to feel the direct results of my interaction,
mm-hmm.
there's a point, Ted, where you get over hitting yourself in the face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that was the changing point. And then comes the system of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all hear this stuff about going to hell and the great book of judgment and the devil. And I was looking at the devil. The devil has so many names, I'm pretty sure that he's been in the witness protection program. Yeah, because with all the names, Lucifer and Beelzebub and all those names,
mm-hmm.
Now, what else could it be? But here's what really happens. If God could not come today, or if the divine could not come today,
mm-hmm.
and the divine sent you,
mm-hmm.
in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and the divine make? So I was no longer going to be a bully
mm-hmm.
and a jerk,
mm-hmm.
and I've worked hard at that, and
mm-hmm.
I was going to be at the bedside. I've been a hospice volunteer for 36 years.
Wow, fantastic.
I have almost 60,000 hours at the bedside.
Wow.
And I have been with 2,008 people going from this world to the next.
Wow.
And I created the Twilight Brigade, which, like you spoke of early, which is the largest end-of-life care volunteer program for passing vets. And I have a program in Spokane, and the one in Seattle is going through some changes because the person has got sick. But I'm in 22 states, and I'm trying to take what I've learned through those three experiences and really empower myself and people who have not had this experience to be able to look at and face this thing that never happens that we call death.
Daniel, if people wanted to volunteer for that brigade to help the dying, for example, veterans, is there information on your website on how to locate and volunteer?
Yeah, just go to Daniel, or just go to Daniel.com or thetwilightbrigade.com.
Great, great. It's also on our website too, which is linked up outofthisworld1150.com. Go ahead, Daniel. I didn't mean to interrupt.
So. No, I was just saying thank you because this is how I came this way, and then 13 years later. Because of complications from being struck by lightning, I had to have open heart surgery.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I watched the entire open heart surgery. I always thought that everybody was Marcus Welby, MD. I never been in an operating room.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
mm-hmm.
know that they listened to Jimi Hendrix music and talked about sex while they're cutting my chest open. But that's
oh, my God.
Now that we've seen Grey's Anatomy and ER, we know that's what happens, but I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but I can recall the conversations that they had, and they thought I was awake during the surgery.
Oh, but I was
floating above watching it. And then seven years later, I had to have brain surgery. Because of complications from being struck by lightning and open heart surgery, I had to take Coumadin, which is literally the base component of decon rat poison. And I had to have a prosthesis valve placed in my aortic because staph infection had eaten it. And I had my third experience. And in the course of this, the study of the similarities between these experiences was remarkable. And watching what I'd seen and trying to understand this, it became very common for me. The system was basically the same. There were a few little changes in each of them, but they were basically the same. And I had three life reviews. So I always say, when people talk about all that stuff, I said, well, what are they going to do, kill me? And that means it doesn't bother me. And then number two is this. If I didn't go to hell in none of the three times that I've been over there, they've missed their chance at me.
Thank goodness. That's
and what true. people have to take a good look at, Ted, in 2014 is not that their present day belief systems that are religious or science based, it's all fear based. 70 cents of every dollar in health care is spent in the last 6 months of life to extend life an average of 16 days.
My goodness.
70 cents. So what's going to happen with our new health care plan? It's not going to happen. If 70 cents of every dollar in health care is spent in the last 6 months of life to extend life an average of 16 days, in a collapsing economy, where do you think in health care run by the government they're going to cut cost?
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
Right there at the end, sure.
Yeah, so now it's called patient-centered care in the Veterans Administration. Why it's called patient-centered care is because there's no one person you can blame for killing your loved one.
Do they also call it comfort care as well? I've heard that
term
thrown
around. Same thing, that's palliative. Mm-hmm. Once you become comfort care, which is called palliative care, you have a team, patient-centered care, so it's a team. And now they're ethics committees. There's all major HMOs are now developing this same formula. Everything that we look at comes from the Veterans Administration. And if you want to see what's going to be the future, then you study the Veterans Administration, and you'll see what the coming health paradigm is going to be like. But for people who think that they're going to be able to hold on to life based on extraordinary chemical and pharmacological and the basic new understanding we have of the body, they can forget it. It's not going to happen. You'll have a bean counter that determines it. But what's exciting about that, Ted, is it's forcing us to embrace an inevitable concept that you only have a certain amount of time here. You're here for a certain reason because you were chosen and you choose to come. And if the divine could not come today and the divine sent you, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and divine make? If people just lock onto that, their lives change immediately. I mean, it changes, because then it's about support, love, gratitude, appreciation, celebrating people's lives and the important issues in their life. And we become less suckers. The biggest crisis, Ted, that I find with people is they never place a value on their love before they give it. They give their love in hopes that someone's going to return it equal to the reason that they gave it. And they don't really have a value of their love until someone gives it back, which very rarely ever meets or exceeds the standards by which you chose to give it without first placing the value on your love. Mm-hmm. If I can change and affect that in some small way, then my life has been richly rewarded. But the difference that me and the divine make is we're at the bedside. I'm at the bedside of those people going from this world to the next, celebrating their life. And I've developed a technique and an art form in the Twilight Brigade that allows people who've never gone through what I've gone through to be able to have the power and the skills and the tools necessary to celebrate the transition of a loved one from this world to the next.
One of my first jobs I ever had in college was at working at a nursing home, and I became friends with the people there, of course. And then I would be so sad when they passed on, and especially when there was no relatives there or friends for that matter. It was very, very sad. So that your work is so important, Damien. And I urge all of you listeners, people listening out there, if you do have some time and would like to help out in Damien's efforts, please visit his website, or please visit my website for the link up to his wonderful group. One thing I wanted to ask you, Damien, I've read in your near-death experience that it's not so much sometimes the bold actions that one takes, but the little acts of kindness from a basis of love that really can make a difference in someone else's life. Could you go into that, please? I remember reading about that.
But, Ted, that's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm a famous international New York Times best-selling author. Who cares over there? They don't care. What they care about is how much you were present. Mm-hmm. In the course of a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times you can create your welcome. You know, mm-hmm. People say thank you. How many opportunities in a day can you create a circumstance that ends up in your welcome?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when someone says thank you, say you're welcome. That's the key. It's the soft moments, a tender look, a pat on the back. It's going to be okay. Opening the door for someone.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that really, truly, spiritually matter,
mm-hmm.
not all that other stuff. And all that story that we've become as capitalist, that whoever has the most toys at the end wins. Well, my answer back to that is, have you ever seen a U-Haul on the back of a hearse?
Oh, that's good. That's really funny.
No, I haven't. Yeah,
it
doesn't happen. So, you know, that's where it gets down to it. And being at this for so long, Ted,
mm-hmm.
I've been at this for so long, till people a lot of times, like my wife says, she says, Daniel, you have an intimacy problem. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, the problem is you don't really like people, and the only people you like aren't going to live long enough, so you don't have to like them but for a short period of time. Now, I often wonder if that's true, because I find great value with people who have less time on the earth, and they don't have time for BS. They don't have time to whine. They have time to find resolution and to look at their life and what value, what difference that they make. And to me, it's a thrill and a privilege to be there to witness one great spiritual being wrapping up their business and heading home.
Very, very, very profound what you just said. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Daniel, is when you were on the other side in each of your near-death experiences, I think you mentioned a couple places I read in some of your papers that you were giving visions of what could happen or what would happen in the future. Is there anything that you've seen recently that's possibly forecast for the future for the United States or the world or humanity?
Absolutely. I always said from 1975 that the battle for the souls of humankind would be fought in healthcare. I said that in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And I've studied healthcare. Well, here we are, everybody.
Right.
Every decision that you make, and I'm a believer in national healthcare. I believe in it. But the present national healthcare system, think of this. When you fill out that paperwork, it first goes to the Department of Homeland Security. Second, it goes to the Department of Justice. Third, it goes to Health and Human Services. And fourth, it goes to the IRS. Well, the only other time in American history that we had a concept like that, it was called the plantation system. And we're back there. And next is watching what's going to happen in the Ukraine. There is no way, as we sit in America, and always said, as Russia will go, so will go the next 50 years. Okay, it's been 38 years since I had this experience. And so now we must watch Russia. You know, and what's going to happen in the Ukraine, over here we're not thinking much about it because it's just some foreign country doing something or whatever it is in a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ukraine is Crimea. And if you think that this revolution that's going to go on right now, you're like in Hungary in 1956. Mm. The Russians will not let it go.
Mm.
And if you look at in some depth in it, Ted, you will see it's really the United States and the European Union that's creating this particular event. And as it happens, we can embroil ourselves in a conflict that we're not ready yet to deal with, but it's coming. The other thing is this, and these are the few of the things that there was 117 things that I wrote and saved that gave people an outline. One was the chip implants. I talked about the chip implants that we're now seeing. But now the next thing is this. The establishment of the Catholic Church's identity in Jerusalem. And people would think that that didn't mean very much, except that you realize that the Israeli government does not recognize the Vatican. And it does not recognize any person or member of the Catholic Church. They can only come under a passport, not as a diplomatic relationship. And if you look at this kind of stuff and you watch a lot of biblical prophecy, I mean, which I'm not so, I don't have a deep acronym toward biblical prophecy, but I see that Pope Francis is making all kinds of moves, and the person who's led this charge was Ratzinger, which was Pope Benedict.
Mm-hmm.
I had no interest in this kind of stuff 38 years ago, Ted. I was just a redneck hillbilly. I was more like the Duck Dynasty or the alligator hunters, and I had no interest in this, and it might as well have been on the moon as opposed to being in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And now I see these things, and I've watched it from an in-depth personality. And somebody says, Daniel, why do you get so excited? I said, who in the world would want to miss the end of time?
Mm.
And now we enter a new period.
I have to ask you this question, Daniel. Some say that the new century for the last 800 years actually starts in the year 14. This is 2014. 100 years ago, in 1914, we had the start of World War I. In 1814, there was the end of Napoleon, and it's like it's a 100-year cycle, and this is a pivotal year in human history. And the second to follow that, you said so goes Russia, so goes the rest of the world, and the Ukraine. The kind of turmoil that you're seeing in the Ukraine, do you see that perhaps that kind of turmoil here in the United States in the future, Daniel? What do you think?
Well, there absolutely will be a revolution in America. Come on. I mean, they're already preparing for it. Look at the weapons purchasing. Look at the preppers. You know, the story of the on National Geographic. They're doing their tax audits. We have to break America as a world power in order for the establishment of the, if you're a religious person, for the rise of the Antichrist, which is a system, an economic system. you would have to reduce the United States. And now in a state of world conflict, we're reducing our military, which I think is smart. I think it's smart because we waste so much money in the fact of the military-industrial complex, and there has to be something that stops that, and this is that pivot. Mm. But we're on a collision course. We have another, people say the collapse of the economy or the collapse of the stock market. Is that going to happen? Absolutely, it's going to happen. Well, what does that mean to everybody else? It means inflation. And if you look at what the FODEX scales are and you look at those things, you're going to realize that 40% of your buying power with a dollar will disappear. Now, I go along with this 14 business because I have been studying the Maya since 1968. I went to the 68 Olympics and between track and field and boxing, between boxing and track and field was water dancing and ice skating and crap like that, which I had no interest in. And someone said, let's go look at the pyramids. And I said, there's no pyramids in Mexico. They're in Egypt. But I went to Teotihuacan. And I was amazed that I realized that at 18 years old, everything I'd ever been told about history was a lie. And I spent the next 4 months, I went to Cancun when it didn't have a paved road. I saw Tulum and Izmal and Tikal and all of these places from the Mayan culture. The Mayans believed that the next Boktun,
yes.
Yeah, began January the 26th. This 2014, and it's the first 5,125 years, and now it's begun. So you will see radical shifts and changes. You will see economic changes. You'll also see famine, drought, and I'm not a big global warming, that America's the cause of, the world is the cause of global warming. I think we have some effect on it. But the earth does what it does, and it doesn't really care. It doesn't really care what we think about it. We should be more conscious about protecting the earth and those kinds of things, Ted. I mean, that's what we should be. But we're not, because it's I, me. And you look at the amount of fresh water left on the earth, and this is what people have to pay attention to.
Well, every day
I'm excited, if you want to know the truth. You know, I think adversity, you grow better in adversity. You can never become a great sea captain if all you ever sail is a calm sea.
Don't the Chinese have a saying, something like, may you live in interesting times?
Yeah, may you live in interesting times. And then when they say, well, what do you think about America? And they say, dig deep ditches, store much grain, and prepare for war. So you have to watch, this is one of the other predictions, you have to watch the relationship between China and Japan. Okay, because the only reason North Korea exists is so that China can't be blamed for the destruction of Japan. And this lady you're going to have on radiation with Fukushima, you have no question that the strength of the island nation of Japan is in enormous peril.
She has publicly stated a few months ago that in six or seven generations, the Japanese people, as we know it today, will cease to look human anymore because of the genetic deformities.
I have no doubt that that's the truth. I have no doubt that it's the truth. My heart goes out to those people. I mean, but the Chinese have long memories. And they're celebrating it because once Japan is out of the way, then the Pacific Rim basin, they can move freely. And as you watch these small islands and the oil deposits and what's called the South China Sea, Vietnam and China and Japan all claim the islands. Let's see who wins.
There is a forecast, a prediction by Nostradamus that in December 2023, the Chinese would attack Seattle, actually, as part of a worldwide conflict. I hope it doesn't happen, but that is one prediction.
That's not going to happen.
Good.
That's not going to happen. The big thing about China is China will move where oil is. Okay, they will move where oil is and natural gas. That means it's Canada, okay, and the Canadian pipeline. But Seattle, if you look at all the ancient prophecies, Ted, America doesn't even play a major role. And the only thing that people have to worry about America, even though we're $20 trillion in debt, is our Trident submarine fleet. Because we don't have nuclear weapons anymore. We have thermonuclear weapons. That means you can fire from 6,000 miles. You can, under 2,200 feet underwater, you can fire a weapon that has 15 multiple warheads on it, and it spreads out, and it ignites at 10,000 feet. And when it hits the ground, it's at 50,000 degrees, and it destroys everything, and you can plant next season. Mm-hmm. It's no radiation. But so where we are right now in ourselves, is it time to look deep inside of our spiritual identity, everybody? We're great, powerful, and mighty spiritual beings. We have dignity, direction, and purpose. So with all this stuff going on around the world, Ted, and all this nonsense and everything about who owns what, then the only thing that could go wrong is we've allowed something to affect our dignity. That means we lose a lot of our direction, and it begins to affect our true purpose. So instead of worrying about all that stuff, what we need to do is see what's affected our dignity. What have we allowed to affect our spiritual selves? Think of this as a funny point of view. In the 60s, when I was growing up, we had the Yogis and the Beatles, and we were all one, and we were all connected, and you hear all that kind of stuff. Today, quantum mechanics and quantum physics has proven that that's true, that dark matter has been created, and that we're all connected. Next, who are you and where are you? When people say, well, who am I and what is my mission? Hard science, think of this. Everybody knows that a human body is made of atoms, molecules, and cells. If you took all the empty space out of everybody's body, every atom in everybody's body, that's 94.6% empty space.
Really?
If you took all the empty space out of everybody, every molecule in everybody's body, that's 98%. If you took all the empty space out of every cell of everybody's body in the United States, that's 97.8%. So let's say there's 316 million people that live in the United States. Mm-hmm. If you took all the empty space out of every body, every atom in every body, every molecule and every body, and all the empty space out of every cell in those 316 million people, the entire population of the United States would fit in a regular size matchbox.
My goodness.
So that's fact. So at that point, let me ask you a question. Who are you and where are you? If that's true. But we are great, powerful, and mighty spiritual beings. We have dignity, we have direction, and we have purpose. We were chosen, and we chose to come here. We were chosen because the divine architect believes there's absolutely no one greater to be born exactly in the situation that you were born in the group that you were born in, to achieve a divine purpose. Very few people fail that place. And then we choose to come, and because we live in a nature that is so controlled by so many other aspects other than our belief in ourselves and that the divine dwells within, we have religions and we have institutions and we have governments that affect our dignity, that confuse our direction and purpose. I believe over the next 4 or 5 years, and especially over the next 3 years, we see a revolution in spiritual consciousness. We'll see it. People are becoming wiser. People are beginning to look at and see that you can't trust your government, you can't trust your bank, you can't trust your church, and you can't trust these things because they're all built on a fabrication of a lie. And once we see that, we begin to look inward. We learn how to meditate a little more. We look at caring and being comforting to people. We go meet our neighbors. I live in a place in Las Vegas because I think Las Vegas is a very spiritual town because I don't drink or gamble. But I think it's a very, like a vortex, and I love it here. But when people start, I know all my neighbors. I've got to go outside, and I know all my neighbors on both sides of the streets. I know them. I go knock on their door to see who they are and that they know me so that they can depend on me. And I've been able to see how that affects other people because when we see each other, either walking the dogs or talking. And this is what we have to get back to. We can't cocoon and isolate. We must become associated, and we must become responsible, caring, loving beings to each other.
I couldn't agree with you more, Danny. Very, very, very profound words, and I'm sure I sure appreciate you saying that. You speak with wisdom, not from this dimension, but from the other dimension. When you had your near-death experiences, and I think your angelic guides are still working through you, even now as we speak.
But think about this, Ted. How many times you guess they're going to have to kill you before you would catch on? You know, think about how crazy I am. I have to kill myself every 10 or 12 years just to keep me interested. You know, I laugh and people say, you know, Daniel, it's amazing that you've been dead 3 times. And I laugh. I said, not near as amazing as that I've been alive 4.
I'll be doggone. Yes. Yes, indeed.
We have to find the lighthearted place in our lives. I mean, we have to, it because I always tell people, when they tell me, they said, well, Daniel, and they start telling me some dreary stuff like what we've been talking about. And I said, listen, if it's not funny, it's not spiritual. If you're not making me laugh when you're telling me about something spiritual, I don't need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've been where I've been and you've done it over a 22-year period, and you've watched and you've come back and you've gone again and you've come back and you've gone again and you've come back, and you've seen there, and it wasn't just once, it was 3 times. If you're not making me laugh when you're talking about something that's spiritual, then there is something incorrect in your assumption, your perspective, or the reason why you're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
That is a joyous, wonderful place. Everybody can't wait to get home. But you have a job to do. And the job is that the divine is depending on you to be the very best that you can be so that the unfoldment of the divine plan for a universe, not just a city or a town or your own home, but for a planet and for a solar system and for a galaxy and then a galaxy and a universe, everything that you think and do is affecting everything else. And once you stop to realize that, Ted, and you know it's the truth, I have nowhere to go, then you start thinking appropriately. When I look at something, is how can I celebrate that victory? How can I pat that person on the back? How can I give them a big hug and let them know they were safe? And how can I be caring and empathetic when someone's sad? I mean, that's another thing that Kat tells me. She says, Daniel, you're not sympathetic enough for people who are going through grief. And I think that she's right, because my systems are celebrating that their job is done,
mm-hmm.
and that this is the end of one part of their life, but it's just a small, insignificant part. If you're going to be alive forever, what is 78.4 years for a man and 81.2 years for a woman to forever? Nothing.
About 20 years ago, I was living in New Delhi, India, and I was living in this neighborhood, and I walked out in the street one time, I'll never forget this, Daniel, and there was a Hindu funeral who came by me, and they had a loud band. The body was completely decked out in flowers, and it was kind of different from the funeral experiences in the West, where everyone's very sad. Of course, death is a sad thing, but the Hindus were celebrating it because they believe in reincarnation. They were celebrating this person's transformation into his next life.
I support that. I don't know about reincarnation. But, man, if you know what I know, I'm so happy when you get to let go, I don't know what to do. Okay? I mean, I don't know what to do. And what I sit around and watch is all the whining that people go through, and most of it's selfishness. They don't want them to go because then they're left alone and that kind of stuff. And so I'm trying to do better because I have that way. I appear to be really sympathetic, but I'm not, because when you talk about if they're safe, well, they're in heaven, crazy. How could they be unsafe? Do you think that they can check on me? Well, sure they can, but who in the world would want to leave in heaven and come to your miserable, depressed self? I mean, think about it. I'm going to come down to heaven and move into this misery that you're going through. So for what reason? I mean, I see that she's right about a lot of that, because death is nothing. It doesn't mean a thing. And when you lift out of your body and you let go of that last breath and you move into that place of light and power and you see the world that you were leaving and you anticipate the world of where you're going, you would never want to come back. You would never want to do it. I never wanted to come back, but you know something, Ted? Nobody ever asked me. Mm-hmm. Because if they'd have asked me, I would be hiding around some clouds or something. I would never. And then the other thing, somebody asked me the other day, they said, Daniel, why do you think that you were chosen with your personality and the way you are, because I am Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? I said, well, I know the answer to that. They were desperate. They were scraping the absolute bottom of the barrel.
Oh, no.
They had completely run out of messiahs. And they said, I got it. Let's go find a jackass and put it off on him and see how well he does. Ta-da! And then I told these people the other day, I said, look, here's what happens. The Archangel Michael and Gabriel, they're down at the Angel Bar doing cloud shots. They get six or seven cloud shots, and Gabriel puts down his horn, and Michael puts down his sword, and they say, listen, I got an idea. Let's go kill Daniel just to see what he... just to see how well he handles it.
My goodness, well.
Everything has to have a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. If you don't learn to laugh about your divinity, mm-hmm. you will take too many things serious. Mm-hmm. And once you start taking things serious, you lose your spiritual focus. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I make fun of everything. Because what are they going to do, kill me? Well, big deal. Who's afraid of that?
Well, you told me off air that you have more dead friends than live ones.
But people don't understand that. I live in both those worlds. There's no, when you've been over there as many times as I go over there, and the first thing in the morning in what you call dawn, twilight, and dusk, I'm mm-hmm. there. Just as I wake up in the morning, I'm in that world. And just before mm-hmm. I go to bed or as the sun begins to fade, I'm there. I see things. I see beings. I see dimensions. I hear people talking. And that's like every day. So I don't have anything that separates me from that energetic pattern. There is no separation to me that what a breath is. You know, there's none of that. And when I let go, like when you're first waking up, your breathing pattern changes, and when it starts from daylight till dusk, you take on a different, watch yourself, you take on a different demeanor, and these are natural cycles, and I live in that in-between world, so I don't really have a problem about whether we're alive there or if there is a world after this and a life after this. I would think that I would be stupid to think any other way. And I think that people who buy all into religion and science as a value of who they are and their spiritual identity are making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad your radio show's on, and I am glad that you allow me to be on this radio show. And I'm begging everybody who's listening to this show to please invite two more friends. James Von Prague is fabulous. Susan Miller if you're anywhere believer in astrology, I am not well informed about astrology, but I print my Susan Miller, Catherine and I print out our Susan Miller forecast every first of every month. I highly recommend you doing that because everybody is influenced. This is something that's funny to me, Ted. Science says that the planets have no influence on us whatsoever, and astrology's nonsense. Well, think about it from my point of view. Your body's 78% water. Does the moon affect the tides?
Absolutely.
Well, then what fool is telling you that the influences of the planets are not affecting you? If your body's 78% water, the moon's affecting the tides, that means it's affecting you. Then why cannot configurations of those energetic natures of those planets, when they're all connected based on dark matter, not be affecting you? It's dumb.
Yep, absolutely. Good point. You know, astrology was actually an integral part of the European university curriculum up until the 17th or 18th centuries, and it was taken out during the
time. Late 1700s.
Correct.
Isaac Newton, an astrologer.
Huh, fascinating. But even today, in many Indian universities, I lived in India before, you can find astrology classes and you can find astrology departments, and they also confer degrees in astrology, Vedic astrology, in India.
Yeah, and think about this. How long have they been around? When we were gathering, eating weeds, wearing bear skins, the Chinese were wearing silk gowns and having 5,000-page cookbooks, and the Indians were one of the most advanced societies in the world because one of the other predictions is to shift from the West back to the East. This was important in what I saw, and I wrote about it in Save, that the shift of power will go back. And what we in the West are doing is holding on to the fueling supplies, natural gas and oil, because that way we can control the growth. But in the course of that, because we've all become so materialistic hedonist, we have completely destroyed probably one of the greatest countries ever created, the United States of America, and we've completely annihilated its value. Well, that should be a point to wake up and grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just see if we do it.
Okay. Daniel, would you like to take a quick call?
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead and put the caller on there, Eric.
All right, we've got Kelly in Moses Lake joining us now.
Kelly, welcome to the program. I'm glad you could call in.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi there.
Kelly, go ahead and ask Daniel a question if you'd like.
I'm just wondering, if I'm going to be, what's in store?
All right, what's in store? When, what, where, and how, Kelly?
Well, is there going to, career?
Okay, in your career, what would be the greatest choice that you could make today that you would want to have in your career?
Success.
Well, then here, think of this, Kelly. The success depends on you making your plan, okay? And here's what else I believe. I believe you are letting, I would call them the old guard. I think you're letting the old guard dictate where your company's going, and I think that they're dictating that as opposed to joining the new revolution. And I think you should listen more to yourself. And it's like, I won't say it's like a group of people, but it's like two or three people who tend to run the show or think they run the show, and it's not as modernized as it should be. And it's like holding on the old ways instead of new ways. So to be successful, I think that you should look at innovation. How do you innovate the job that you have? And you'll be successful. Let me ask you this. Are you having a difficult time with I won't say it's a spouse, but it's like a parent? Are you worried more about a parent or I think it's not a spouse because it doesn't have that feeling to it, but a parent?
Well, yeah, my parents are thinking about relocating, and my dad's been sick.
Okay, let me tell you about that. That's affecting what you're thinking you're going to do in your life, and them leaving also emotionally affects you. But you got to remember this, Kelly. As they make their decisions and what they're doing, if they ask you to be responsible and to help them, then you have an obligation. And if they don't ask you, then you don't. And if you take that out of your worry, you take that out of your mindset, you will see that you'll see better what to do in your career. And I'll tell you something else. You've begun to like sugar a lot more than in recent times, and you need to pay attention to your sugar consumption.
Okay.
Yeah, you're getting kind of comfort foodish, and you like sugar. So if you cut that down, it's going to change and give you a clearer perspective. And don't pay attention to that bunch of old biddies.
We're at the end of our program. Thank you again for listening, you all. I hope you have a fantastic day. We'll be on the air again 1 week from today. Hello, Daniel.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive.